Record high water levels for the Great Lakes region have created problems for shorelines, infrastructure, property owners, and industries that rely on those waters. This January, Lake Michigan reached record highs with water levels averaging about 4 inches above the previous January high set in 1987. Lake Superior also broke records for high water levels in January. That's according to data from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Those record highs come just 7 years after Lake Michigan and Lake Huron were at record low levels. So what does all this fluctuation mean, and what can we do about its impact on coastal communities? Adam Beckley is a coastal engineering outreach specialist at the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I give a little taste of the numbers there. Give us a sense of this fairly dramatic fluctuation in our water levels in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, so you mentioned that Lake Michigan itself was at an all-time low, and it was a period of sustained lows of over a decade. And the question then was, are lows the new normal? And now we've certainly seen that that's not the case. We had quite a dramatic rise in water levels, up 5.5 feet from that record low to where we are today. And it's basin-wide. Every Great Lake set a record for at least the month it was in over the last year.
I talked to somebody from the Army Corps of Engineers a while back, and he said maybe abnormality is the new normal, these fluctuations that it sounds like we hadn't really seen before.
Yeah, I mean, the Great Lakes have always gone up and down, low to high. It's something that if we're on the Great Lakes, we have to be accustomed to. But yeah, the dramatic rise is pretty unprecedented to go from record low to record high.
Let's sit on that record high a little bit now. We've seen storms, flooding events, damage on coastal communities. What kind of effect is this high water level having on our Lake Superior and Lake Michigan shorelines?
Sure. There's a couple of effects. And so with the water levels being high, that makes it kind of a starting point for flooding and erosion to happen. So when storms come in, with strong winds, they'll push water up and cause a storm surge. They also create waves on top of that. So in low-lying areas, on top of high water levels and a storm surge and waves, that can bring a lot of water in and inundate those low-lying areas. Some of our higher-lying areas aren't immune to the problems either, because those waves can start eroding the coast. And because they have a starting point that's higher than we've almost ever seen, we can see quite rapid erosion.
If I am running a city on the shore, or if I have property, I guess with these high water levels, I might want to try to build in a way that deals with these high water levels. But in 10 years, they might be low again. Does that complicate the situation? We don't necessarily know what Lake Michigan or Lake Superior were planning for.
Yeah, it is difficult to manage those highs and lows. But it's being cognizant that we need to be prepared for both situations. And one of the things that can be an issue is the water level cycle from low to high and do it over a period of many years. So sometimes you have never seen water levels like this before. And so it's a new thing to people who are running things, people who own property. But in terms of history, we know that highs and lows have existed.
I know you consult with communities on the shorelines and how they can plan for this kind of variation, the impacts of highs, lows, and in-betweens. What is your starting point when you're talking to somebody to say, how they can build for the next 30 years of high and low water levels?
Sure. Yeah. With this high water levels now, it's easy to look right at the water. And I like to tell people, take a step back and say, let's work from the top down. Where is something that we value, a home or infrastructure? And let's start looking, how far away is that from the hazard, either from flooding or from erosion? Is there an issue, or is it an emergency? And I'll say up front, if there's concern, consulting with a professional like an engineer or geologist is always a good step to kind of first assess that threat and then start thinking about what to do. But starting from the top is having distance between that hazard. And sometimes that means if there's space available on a property, picking up and moving a home. That can oftentimes be the most cost-effective and cost-efficient way to stay out of harm's way.
Easier said than done, depending on where you are.
Certainly.
If you're in a crowded suburb or city, it's a little harder to find that extra space.
Yeah. It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all solution, and there is no one-size-fits-all solution on the Great Lakes. So looking at the top to bottom, then starting to look at, okay, where's water coming off my property? Because that can be, we're concerned with the water in the lake, but oftentimes water running off from our roofs, our driveways, can actually cause erosion starting from the top and compound the issue with the waves hitting at the lake. So trying to manage that water, where is it going? Pointing downspouts away from the edge of a bluff, collecting that water in a rain barrel and using it to water plants, that can a lot of times help stave off some of that compounding erosion from the top and bottom. And then as we work our way down to the water line, then if we still have an issue that the property is still under threat, then there's nowhere to move it, then maybe thinking about trying to slow down the erosion starts to come into play. But that's a very expensive proposition and can have unintended consequences. So that's why I like to say start at the top and then work your way down and use that as maybe your last resort.
Talking to Adam Beckley from the UW Sea Grant Institute, looking at the impact of up and down levels in the Great Lakes over the years and what that means for coastal communities, coastal property owners. Let's talk about that last solution. I've seen people talk about fortifying, in effect, their shoreline to prevent erosion. And that, as you're saying, can have unintended side effects. What can that look like?
Sure. So a lot of common solution in the Great Lakes is what's called a rock revetment. And so that is using large stones that are big enough to resist the being moved by waves, angular stones that kind of lock in with each other, and that sort of slows down erosion of the coast because the rock is much more resistant to erosion than the natural shoreline. However, you're changing the character of the coast. So as waves hit those rocks, they reflect energy back into the water, makes it harder for sand to settle out. So if you put in a revetment, you're really reducing the chances that you'll ever have a beach in front of your property. And as we reflect out that wave energy, that can increase erosion at neighboring properties. So, again, it's one of those things where it's not to be taken lightly, but it's also sometimes the solution.
So it sounds like an approach like that would have to be coordinated with your neighbors, whether you're talking about I have property and two people next door to me have property, or I'm a Midwestern city and the city next door is worried about if I'm shooting the extra wave force at their beaches.
Yeah, it's always a good thing to try and work together with neighbors to kind of come up with a solution. It can be, first off, just more cost-effective to have one mobilization cost and trying to get a structure done. And then also you can kind of work together to mitigate those unintended consequences to some extent.
Now, we've been talking about erosion as one of the big risks, and that's something that can take place over time. We've seen some storm events now with these high water levels that are, damaging breakwaters in southeastern Wisconsin, causing flooding and damage on Lake Superior. What can we do for those, acute events, if I could use a medical term, to prepare for those with high water levels?
Well, one thing in elevating buildings is one option to get them out of the way or moving them out of the floodplain. That water comes in with a lot of force, so it can be difficult to stop it if it's too high. I know sandbagging can be a temporary measure to some extent to help hold back water, but it's definitely not a permanent solution, and you're only protected as high as those sandbags go. So.
And I've seen concerns when infrastructure has been damaged along coastlines that, are we going to rebuild these culverts or breakwaters or whatever just like they were, when just like they were is what just got damaged? Are you seeing communities say, we need to think about what we used to think the worst case was and make it a little worse of a worst case?
Definitely. And with the unknowns of where the water levels will be in the future, or how they might fluctuate going forward, that complicates things a little bit. But definitely that's part of the conversation with everyone is, what are we actually going to be preparing for, and maybe think beyond what we've seen in the past.
Now, is this partly a mindset issue? Because I know if I stand on the shore of Lake Superior, it seems like this eternal, unchanging thing. But the reality, as we're talking about here, is where it is this year might be different in 5 or 10 years. Do we need to build in the first place with these fluctuations in mind?
Yeah, if you're starting from blank slate, thinking about how much erosion has occurred at this site historically, and trying to locate assets, roads, houses, a sufficient distance away to have a long geo time, the amount of time and years that it would take for erosion to get to you. So starting thinking that way, and also with in terms of elevation too, thinking about how high could the water go, and the high water levels in a big storm, and you want a little bit of extra buffer space even beyond that. So,
and of course, a lot of places aren't blank slates. We've talked about this some. For those communities that you know, these high water levels are higher than they were built for, we've talked about this a little, but what are the first steps they might take now to deal with this in the future?
Well, I think it's first kind of assessing what is at risk, what assets are at risk, and at what level of either water level will they start taking damage, and trying to figure out, prioritizing, okay, what is the most at risk? Maybe what coastal protection might be in the worst shape, perhaps, if you know, shore protection needs maintenance, and try to prioritize based on that. It's not an easy task. I don't want to make it sound like
sure.
that, but finding a starting point.
Speaking of not easy tasks, is anybody out there saying they can predict what the water levels are going to do in 1 year, 3 years, whatever?
No, not out that far. The Army Corps of Engineers issues a 6-month forecast at the beginning of every month, and so those just came out for February, and Lake Michigan is definitely expected to stay high, and the center of those forecasts are above the record highs for all the months going out 6 months. So
spring and summer storm season could be kind of scary if those levels are staying up there.
Certainly.
Well, a lot to watch out for, Adam. Thanks a lot for coming up to the studio today.
Well, thanks for having me.
That's Adam Beckley, Coastal Engineering Outreach Specialist at the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute. He joined us for a look at the impact of high water levels currently in the Great Lakes and what communities can do to help prevent damage.